Cross the Streams podcast. Kip's here. Welcome back. Season 8. I believe we're on episode 217, if I'm not mistaken, and we'll double check that as we go through. But excited to be back. You know, our last episode was an awesome one. We had a lot of great feedback from having Coach Valencia Peterson from ODAP, Open Doors Abuse and Awareness Program, on and talking about the different strategies she's using in Philadelphia, Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, across the country to help young men do prevention, violence prevention work. So we're really excited to have her on and excited for today, which will be a shorter episode. Don't have an interview. It's just me today. But, you know, some of the things that I'm excited about in the work that I've been doing now, you know, obviously when you're a coach, you know, you kind of hope that your kids, like maybe some in some versions of me, you're like, hey, you know, it'd be great if my kids picked up basketball. I'm a coach in basketball, and could me being a coach in basketball help them become the athletes or the performers they want to be? You know, and I, you know, my daughter is into basketball. My oldest son is not. He doesn't play basketball anymore. My youngest loves hoops, you know, but dealing with his unique set of challenges with autism, where that takes him in terms of formal basketball, we don't know. But that ship has never really been a focus of mine. As much as I and Kane, I think, wanted to be good athletes, you know, I don't know how much of it was because purely because our dad was a coach or purely because our dad in the sport resonated with us. You know, that's probably for another podcast. But for me, where I've gotten a lot of validation, I guess is the word, or maybe even hope, that the work I do for teams of men is resonating in my house, in that not only hopefully am I showing up better as a husband and a father, which only my wife and my kids could grant even credence to that. They would have to be the ones to say those things. That's what I'm going for and hoping the work, the self-awareness and self-interrogation, self-reflection and self-interrogation I'm doing as a husband and father is paying off in some way, shape, or form in our house. But I know my kids are versed and I know my kids are fluent in a lot of the terminology, a lot of the issues of the day that revolve around gender violence prevention, that revolve around being anti-oppression in all its forms, that revolve around things that I'm passionate about and I think are important for the next generation, for the young folks to be versed in and give a damn about. And I wanted today's episode, while it flows in line with what I wanted to do with season 8 of the podcast, to really tackle some of the things, some of the methodology, some of the beliefs, some of the vision, some of the programming, some of the work I do to try to empower coaches of male athletes to enlighten their young men to a reimagined manhood. And then define reimagined manhood in terms of becoming a man that is embracing emotional fluency and agility, that is versed in healthy relationship skills, that is anti-violence, that is anti-harm, that is really trying to onboard qualities that we all claim a lot in sports, but you know, hopefully we're actually doing the work and not just using sports framing to talk about it. We tackle those things head on. But today's episode is about something my daughter brought to me, you know, and it's not my daughter's story in that it's not something that she lived, so I'm okay sharing it, but it's something she shared with me from social media that led us to a conversation that led me down a rabbit hole of investigating what she had saw on social media and then finding articles that really I think I can help share with dads and husbands listening and wives and moms. If you're listening, feel free to share it with your partners. Because I think it was awesome that she was activated not only by the video she saw on social media, which we know all our kids are exposed to, but also activated by some of the language and some of the knowledge she already had from being stuck listening to me so much, but she was making it and finding her way with it to where she wanted to find out more about the topic and dive into it in a different way. So that's our topic today. We're gonna dive into objectification of women. We're gonna tie maybe a little bit of the male gaze. Maybe we're gonna dive into destroying any ideas or concepts around she wore this or she was asking for it in terms of sexual assault and violence. And it's all, luckily for me, birthed out of the smart, intelligent, powerful, forceful woman my daughter is, and hopefully we can help you all activate your kids in the same way. So welcome back to Teams of Men, Season 8, Episode 217. All right, so we're back. And here's the setup. My daughter, who had just turned 15 in March, and she brought to my attention something she saw on one of her Instagram reels, because she had just gotten Instagram. In our house, my wife and I decided once you turn 15, you get one of the major platforms, you can have an account on there. So I think it was a TikTok video, but it was shared on Reels where my daughter saw it. And the creator is Just Silly for Reels, Whoa, and I think the actual TikTok account is Big Baddie GY Aldum. So that's why I want to give credit to this. It appears to be a teenager, but my daughter brought this video to me, and it wasn't making fun of the Cowboys or making fun of LeBron, which is usually the only video she sends to me. But this was something she was activated by and wanted to discuss and wanted to see if it was something I could use in teams of men with male athletes. So I'm going to play the audio for you here of the video. And then we'll discuss, some of our takeaways, and I want to talk about the rabbit hole it led me down and kind of seeing how I could activate it in teams of men. So here's that sound.
So I'm reading my textbook and I literally just found out the most messed up thing. Basically, there's this part of your brain that helps you recognize the difference between like a person and just like an object. So if you're walking down the street, then the activation in this part of your brain increases because you can recognize them as like a living, breathing thing with like feelings and emotions and whatnot. Whereas if you were like looking at a lamp, the activation would decrease, obviously. So here's the messed up part. So they found that in really sexist men, when they saw a picture of like just a regular woman, the activation of this part of their brain went up like normal. But if she was dressed even the slightest bit provocatively or even posed in a certain way, the activation in this part of their brain decreased, meaning they no longer saw her as a living thing with thoughts and emotions. They literally saw her as an object. Like, people are like, oh, you objectify women. They actually, in their brain, only see you as an object. Like, they don't even recognize you as something that has thoughts and feelings. Okay, so I'm reading my textbook.
So that, right? That's a powerful statement about what could be happening in the minds of men when seeing women in scantily clad outfits, right? And so my daughter and I talked about it. We discussed like, yeah, I think that is something I should deep dive more. Let me go find these studies that this young creator online was using, and then let's figure out how we can activate this discussion with men. Because if it is true, and if it is going on that parts of their brain are turning off, or parts that are only that are trained to see things as objects and not full of life, that is absolutely a potential for harm for women in that scenario. So what I did was I took the video and I threw it into the Googles. And what it took me to first was an article about a conversation that aligns with Susan Fiske's findings. And she wrote this article, it was in National Geographic. Bikinis make men see women as objects, scans confirm. And here's what Fiske and her team discovered when they conducted brain scans on 21 heterosexual male volunteers for this article and this study. Tool association, number one. When men were shown pictures of women in bikinis, the region of the brain associated with tool use lit up. Number two, first person action verbs. Men were most likely to associate images of sexualized women with action verbs like I push, I grasp, I handle. And dehumanization, third thing from the study. Some men showed no activity in the brain region that usually responds to understanding others' intentions. They weren't thinking about these women as people with minds and feelings, but rather as objects. So this made me think that this might have been one of the studies that the video my daughter found was rooted in. And I want to talk about, because in teams of men work, then we would talk to male athletes and their coaches, and you should talk at home to your young men. And with each other as a family in general, that this dehumanization perpetuates a culture that reduces women's value to their physical appearance and prevents healthy, respectful relationships built on some version of mutual understanding and actual empathy, especially from the part of the men. It also feeds into a dangerous idea that a woman's clothing can justify sexual assault, an issue that was highlighted, I think it was last week, now that we're in early part of May, it was last week, Denim Day. I think it was April 24th. And Denim Day across the country is part of SAM Month, Sexual Assault Awareness Month, encourages people to wear jeans to raise awareness about sexual violence and challenge the harmful notion that survivors are responsible for their assault, something which is a horrific idea, based on the choice of their clothing. You've heard it. Well, if she didn't wear this, she was asking for it. Or she did wear that, so that meant she wanted sex. All those horrific ideas and tropes that teams of men exist to help bust out of young men's ideas and start building better survivor advocacy. I found another article in kind of trying to piece all these things together. Dean Burnett's article, How Provocative Clothes Affect the Brain and Why It's No Excuse for Assault, addresses that issue head on by challenging the persistent myth that a woman's outfit can make her responsible for her own assault. Burnett argues that this notion that's often used in victim blaming has no basis in science. Here's why. Number one, legal autonomy. Regardless of how a woman is dressed, she retains the right to bodily autonomy. If she desires sex, it's solely her decision who, when, and where she has sex with. Nothing about her clothes changes that fact that it's her decision. Number two, biological restraint. The brain has built-in restraint mechanisms, such as the orbital frontal cortex and the amygdala, which can suppress sexual behavior and elevate the appropriateness of arousal. Number three, the alcohol factor. Alcohol can compromise these systems, making it easier to act impulsively, and the decision to get drunk then remains the individual's responsibility. Burdett goes further stating, I couldn't help myself is never an acceptable excuse for harmful behavior. Just now, how is it not an acceptable excuse for drunk driving? Right. Both these articles, the bikinis and what it activates in the brain and this discussion about provocative clothes, emphasize a vital point that I think my daughter is able to be versed and fluent in now. But I need to continue the work of spreading it across team rooms of men, that women's clothing does not excuse assault in this cultural and social context where this behavior is tolerated, sometimes can be rooted in. If we allow men to continue to objectify women. At Teams of Men, we firmly believe that men are not inherently evil and are not born incapable of elevating their behavior. We have the full capacity to see, feel, and empathize from the time we're born to the time we die. It's the man box, and what we rail against at Teams of Men. This man box culture often forces these qualities out of us or causes us to choose to repress what we know as right and wrong, and to repress what we know as the ability to humanize everyone we come in contact with, regardless of gender, regardless of sexual orientation. We are able to empathize with people, but we choose and police it out of ourselves in order to perform towards the man box and make sure in our circles of men that we're all performing to us. So I would say this, my daughter's sharing the video and my deep dives of these articles really leads me to a further challenge for everyone listening and for more of the work I do with Teams of Men. We got to rethink exposure. What kind of media are we all consuming on a day-to-day basis, and how is it shaping our perception of women? I just ran this activity actually with a group of middle school to freshman year young men where we asked them, guys, we're not telling you what to listen to in your music, but we're asking you, what is your constant consumption of certain lyrics, certain topics? Is it numbing you to reacting towards things that we know are harmful? Are you now numb to your friends saying something misogynistic? Are you now numb to over-sexualization of women because you're digesting it all the time? And I ask us to think of that ourselves too, you guys, as a Tupac fan, as a fan of Lil Durk, as a fan of Kendrick, as a fan of everyone in that I still listen to their music. Am I still able to remain, to call out harmful ideas in my reality? I don't want to become numb because of what I expose myself to constantly. Number two, intentional conversations. We got to talk to our kids about what healthy relationships look like. We got to talk to our kids about how they perceive, especially boys. What do you perceive in the clothing choices women have? Number one, they have full agency to wear whatever the hell they want to wear. It does not excuse any way you react or behave to it. They did not get up in the morning with the idea that they needed to impress you or stand out to men or allure men. They got up and wore what they wanted to wear. And we need to have these conversations, especially with our young men. And I know I've had to have intentional conversations with my wife and women in my life that I trust to allow my daughter full agency to choose the clothes she wants to wear. Because sometimes I get in my old ways and like, oh my God, what's this going to say to boys in the hallway? And then I got to check myself and recognize it doesn't matter. It's what she wants to wear, how she wants to feel, and they need to figure out their damn selves. And I do as well. And number three, we got to support our partners. We got to encourage your partners to share their experiences with us, especially men listening. We got to encourage our partners to share their experiences and perspectives on being objectified throughout their lives. And we need to create spaces where they feel comfortable and where they're willing to share these things with us and our sons and our daughters. Because when we have these conversations in our homes, our kids aren't running to the internet to find discussions about things that are happening. When we are willing to share missteps and we are willing to share experiences in our homes, our kids have a better chance of finding where they land, finding their moral compass, rather than being told and influenced by it online. As I said, as always, We're committed, not just with the podcast, but with Teams of Men and myself and my vision of the work of going into athletic spaces and redefining masculinity and creating a culture where women, LGBTQ community, everyone's respected and valued for who they are, not just what they look like. And as we go forward, if you're a coach listening, if you're a husband, a mom of male athletes, and you know their program could use our work, do not hesitate to reach out, teamsofmenllc.com. And as always, we thank you for listening to Cross the Streams, Season 8, Episode 217.